Good morning, dear people in Brussels and beyond. Welcome to Radio Economica. We are very happy to have with us this morning Mr. Maurizio Castelletti from DG Move. Good morning. Welcome to Radio Economica, Mr. Castelletti.
Good morning, and thank you to Radio Economica for giving me the opportunity to intervene on the European Year of Rail,
which is our big topic today. We understand that you are the man in charge of the single European rail area within the directorate in charge of land in DG Move of the European Commission. And this year is going to be the European Year of Rail. This is a cause for joy for us because we love our trains. We need our trains very much. But could you please tell us why should 2021 be the year of rail?
There are different reasons why rail has been chosen to be advertised, I would say, during this year. So I think it's a right momentum to do so. You have to consider at least three reasons. So first of all, the environmental performance of rail. As you know, we are living in the period in which we are doing a lot of efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So, and rail is, of course, one of the most efficient mode of transport in terms of energy consumption, only 2% of the transport energy consumption, and it is one of the less polluting mode of transport, so only 0.4% of the transport greenhouse emission. Rail is also a very safe mode, so if you compare rail with road, you will discover that traveling by car is 50 times riskier than traveling by train. And it also has a very broad connectivity. So rail is connecting Europe in a very broad manner. The network in Europe is very extensive. It is of the same size of a network in the United States of America, far beyond the network in China and Russia. Secondly, I would say that the potential of rail is still very unexpressed. So rail is already linking many regions and capitals and towns, but there is an untapped potential to serve long-distance cross-border, let's say, travel. So today, these travels cross-border long-distance are very low for passenger, only 7%, and 52% for freight. So there is this potential, and rail can become really complementary to aviation, and it can compete with road and coaches over long distance. Finally, we have to say that there is a new trends in the society. We have seen last year also in Sweden, there are new attitudes towards rail, attention, a big attention to sustainability. So we have to see that there is a concrete opportunity for rail to become the backbone of a European transport system.
Thank you for these facts and figures. But maybe being a non-expert, I should say that the share of rail is somewhat a bit low. It seems for passengers, as you said, just a 7.8%, and freight is only 17.8%. It seems to be very low. Is there a particular reason why rail seems to be a little bit, behind passenger cars, of course, and lorries in particular, road transport? Is there a cause? Why has there been, is prices too high? Is there underinvestment? What is the reason why rail seems to be second or perhaps third on the list for transportation?
Yeah, I think you are touching upon a major problem for rail, because of course the policy of the European Commission has been always in favor of a modal shift towards a more sustainable mode of transport. But rail, as you're highlighting, is still lagging behind. The modal share is still stable since many years. So as you can see in these statistics, so 7.8 for passenger and almost 19% for freight. There are reasons which justified this low modal share. They are not only related to the cost of the transport. They are also linked to the lack of a well-functioning network at European level. We still suffer from the legacy of a national network, the lack of interoperability, so it's still difficult to organize efficient cross-border long-distance services. We believe that rail in the future, in the next 10 years, should improve a lot in the provision of long distance and cross-border services, both for passenger and freight. And in this way, rail may compete on an equal footing with aviation. It may become really complementary aviation. Aviation maybe will concentrate in the future on long distance, long haul transcontinental flights, and the short flights within Europe will be left to the rail mode, and the same applies to freight. So by becoming more performant over the network, it will capture more goods to be transported by rail. We have not to forget that for rail freight, there is of course the cost dimension, because you have at the origin of a trip and at the destination you have transship the goods. But there is also a factor of punctuality, reliability, flexibility. We are not yet there, so we still suffer from a bad performance in many cases for rail freight, and this is why we have to improve this performance. Only by doing this, we think that rail may increase the modal share, and this objective, which was, by the way, enshrined into the European Green Deal document, may be achieved.
You mentioned the legacy of national railways, but when I remember my youth 30, 40 years ago, I had the impression railways were much more European than today. I have here a nice picture from the Orient Express, which I used to go from Istanbul to Paris in the 70s. It was less luxury already, but it still existed. And you had a high number of trains crossing borders. You had through wagons crossing borders, night trains, car trains. There has to be a sort of even regression to national railways rather than European ones. So from the consumer's point of view, we have the impression it's the European vision is completely lacking.
I think depict, it is right. But you have to take into account the changes we have experienced during this period, so in the last 50, 60 years. So this model was working because it was based on a different approach. So we had the national monopolies cooperating between themselves. So it was based on a strong cooperation between monopolies. So it was possible to have these kind of services because of this cooperation between fully vertical integrated railways in the end of a member state, of a state. Then what it happened? It happened, there was a strong competition, of course, from road with a car ownership, which increased a lot in the 50s, 60s, and in addition, the competition of low-cost carriers. So, and these caused a decline in the demand for these services, so the cost was very high. Today, we have a different environment, which is no more based only on cooperation, but it's also based in competition. The hope was, of course, as we have seen for aviation, that competition would have been sufficient to resurrect a rail sector with many services. But this was not enough. Why was not enough competition? Because competition is working well only if you have a good network which is supporting the services, an interoperable network. So lacking a good network of good capacity by which you can provide good services, of course, competition cannot take place in the right way. So I think the new model is not as the old model, but I think there are signs today that the services, for example, also the night train services that you are showing on this slide, may restart on a new basis, on a more commercial basis, based on a good network, and based, of course, on the new attitude of citizens that would like to travel more and more by rail.
Well, thank you for this brief look back in the recent decades. Now, today, we all have lots of expectations, of course, about the recovery plan, which was agreed last July. Now, do you expect this recovery plan to help boost investment in rail infrastructure, to recreate a transnational European network, to catch up with this long-standing ambition of Europe, which was the trans-European network since 1995? Where is rail in the recovery plan? I mean, this is a very early stage, of course, but do you have a vision of that?
I think for the first time ever, I think in Europe, in the Union, we have today the possibility of boosting investment on the basis of this recovery plan, but not only, also on the basis of a next generation EU. So we have a total of amount of 1.8 billion. And I think rail and all this should be spent on the basis of objective of sustainability, digitalization, resilience. And rail is one of a sector which is best placed to benefit from these investments. So we believe that, first of all, investment in the context of a 10T networks will continue, and I think rail will keep its central place in the trans-European transport network. Let's not forget that in the last financial cycle, more than 70% of the budget was dedicated to rail, so 16 billion of euro. In the context of a recovery plan, of course, the decision is up to member states. They have to decide, but we are confident that rail will have a specific place to in this plan. So we are already scrutinizing some plans of a member states, and we see the rail is one of the sector which will benefit from the recovery plan. Of course, as investment will be like in the case of a 10T network, will concentrate on the missing links, on the bottlenecks, on digitalization. So we have to make the operation of rail transport more efficient, more digital. They may also concentrate on the renewal of rolling stocks. So there are, I think we see this intention of a member states to invest in rail. And this is why there is today a momentum for rail. And this momentum should be kept for the next year. So the 10T networks should come to completion by 2030. So by 2030, the major axis will be completed. For example, the Lyon-Turin, the Rail Baltica. So by 2030, we will have a good network connecting all the capitals. So because of these, rail services should be by this date, by 2030, we have to also, we expect to see a network of rail services linking the major capitals and competing with or even replacing flights. So I think all the elements are there, we believe, to make of rail in these 5-10 years one of the major mode of transport, both for the for passenger and for businesses.
I was going to say and ask how much money. Of course, this is project based, but still, do you have an understanding at this stage of the budget available for rail in Europe within the Next Generation EU?
In the context of the Next Generation EU, of course, the main budget devoted to the to the network, to the trans-European network, is a connecting Euro facility budget. For this budget today, the financial envelope is more or less the same as it was in the last financial cycle, and we expect the level of support to be given to rail to be of the same amount as in the last financial cycle. I indicated the number of 16 billion of euro. Of course, this will be not enough, we believe, so it will have to be complemented by the national budget. It will have to be complemented by also by the possibility to get financing from the European Investment Bank, the Green Bank. So there is, of course, the instrument of Invest EU. So I think there are many instruments, including based on grants, based on loans, and this will help to complete, as I was saying before, the TEN-T network, so to complete the infrastructure, to remove all the bottlenecks, to increase the standard of infrastructure. This maybe will not be enough because it's not only the infrastructure which counts in this case. We have to improve also in the provision of the services, and I would like to quote here the need to have an efficient timetabling. So we have to have a train path which are scheduled in the right manner. We have ticketing, which is a big problem. So we have to make tickets more accessible to passengers. So if you have to book a train and to buy a ticket, it should be as easy it is today for aviation. We have a question of comfort. So we have to provide a good rolling stock because people like to travel by train, so but in a comfortable manner. So there are action to be taken not only on the side of the rail infrastructure, but also on the side of the provision of the rail services.
Now, I will. I think my colleague Conrad has had a question about discounts. I mean, of course, we all have in mind the very popular initiatives such as Eurorail for young people, and not just for young people, but also citizens in general. But also there is a discount of discounts, you know, for family arrangements on trains that are not trans-European. If you move from Frankfurt to, Spain, of course, you might have a discount in Germany, provided you have bought a family card or, I don't know, a senior card in the German system. Then you have to buy another one for the French network. And this is, of course, one of these things that make a little bit people angry. I don't know if that's part of your reflections.
I think you touch upon the question of the passenger rights, and you know we recently came to the conclusion on this file with the European Parliament and the Council, and the new legal text will enter into force next year. So we have tried to focus our attention on this question of the passenger rights and to see how passenger may benefit prices, I would say, of tickets, and also for better tickets. One of the questions is not always a question to have access to different modalities of tickets, so which including discounts. It's also the question for long distance travel. Is also the question of be sure that these tickets that you buy will always be used, even in a condition of disruption. So it's a question of a through ticketing. So if you buy a ticket to go from Berlin to Lisbon, for example, you should be reassured that even in a case of an unexpected stop of a train or a delay, you don't miss the connection. So we intend to work on in this area. So there should be an agreement between railway undertakings to ensure that there is always a protection of a passenger when traveling over long distance. This is essential because there are not so many trains. Let's say there is not a single train running from Berlin to Lisbon. So you have to take two, three, four trains. And this is why there is a need for protecting the passenger by giving sufficient guarantees that the ticket he or she has bought will bring him or her to the final destination. Of course, in the policy about ticket, it is the responsibility of railway undertakings. We are confident that they will continue to expand their offer to passenger to increase the traffic. On our side, as you know, and as you have said, we are very active during the European Eurorail with this initiative, which is called Discover EU, which will give to all young to the young generation the possibility when they are 18 years old to travel all over Europe with a free pass. So this will continue. It will become even more popular this year during the European Year of Rail, because we are discussing with colleagues, we intend to link this initiative, Discover EU, with the celebration of the European Year of Rail.
And that's, of course, looking beyond the current COVID crisis, but it's something I believe that we have very much been looking forward to. So perhaps there is a dynamic in that leading towards a transition to a normal world on sounder basis. That's where rail comes into the picture, I believe. Now, you referred to these trans-European networks, and I understand that the single European railway area is based on 9 corridors. Looking at maps that are available on your website, I could see there is a very dense network or succession of networks at the center of Europe, going north to south. Is there a reason for that? What's the logic behind these 9 corridors? What are the priorities? From a geographical point of view, in a few words.
This initiative was taken now in 2010, so 10 years ago. The intention was to create a rail network at European level for competitive rail freight. So the intention was to give a boost to rail freight 10 years ago. And to do so, the legal basis, the regulation, because there is a regulation establishing all this network, focus on the major corridors that we can see on this slide, where the transport of goods by rail is more important. So you can see a lot of axes going from the ports in the north to the south, and also from west to east. It has been a good initiative in the sense that this initiative obliged the member states and also the managers of the rail infrastructure to cooperate, so to put together their efforts to increase rail freight It is based, of course, on the network, on the Trans-European network, but the intention was also to give to rail freight a good capacity, so quality train path, so along these corridors, so that they could perform in a more efficient manner. And this is about more punctuality, so a better punctuality. It's about more speed, so the time journey reduce, reliability. So these corridors are still, let's say, in the phase of implementation. We have seen some progress in these initiative. I would say it is not enough, because we have done an evaluation recently last year, and we concluded that this effort was useful, but is not sufficient to boost rail freight. It is not sufficient because it's still difficult. This cooperation between member states and the manager of a rail infrastructure should be made even more efficient than today. And we are thinking, we are reflecting on how we can improve even more the situation. But this is the future. So the future is to have a network of composed by the major lines and the major terminals, so which will allow to shift a major, substantial part of the goods which are today carried by road to rail. So this is really one of the flagship initiative of the union in relation to the transport of goods by rail.
And that's very good news indeed, especially if we look at our motorways. But I was thinking of other actors, that's the Chinese, who have developed a full strategy across Eurasia, across the continent. I don't know how far advanced it is, but they seem very earnest about building rail corridors all the way from East China through Kazakhstan, through Russia, Poland, and all the way to Duisburg and perhaps beyond. So does your portfolio, I mean, a single European rail area, cover this external dimension, this transcontinental dimension? Are there connections and negotiations with the Chinese operators that are mostly public?
I think what you show on this map, of course, again, is a potential of rail to link different continents. In Europe, of course, we are creating this single European railway area, and the single European railway area is basically set on the basis of a regulatory framework, a very, very broad regulatory framework, including market opening, including interoperability, safety, the train driver licensing. So there are many aspects which create this framework, and by applying this framework, you create this single European railway area. But the single European railway area has also a vocation to be expanded to neighboring countries. So this is what we are doing, for example, with the Western Balkans, where there is a transport community treaty, but not only, also to the Caucasian countries. So in this context, we are also in discussion with China, and of course this discussion takes place in the context of a Union Asia connectivity strategy, and this discussion has a main focus what you are showing on the map, not only these two corridors which are let's say mainly using the Trans-Siberian routes, but also corridors in the south which are using which are crossing the Caucasian country. We have recently decided to engage with China in the context of a EU-China connectivity platform and to launch a study. To launch a comprehensive study. It will be a joint study. The study will focus precisely on this corridor. So the intention is to see how we can improve the connectivity by it's similar to what we do in the context of a trans-European network. You analyze the corridor, you see all the barriers, you have to detect all the barriers to connectivity along the corridors. They could be physical barriers, they could be missing links, they could be bottlenecks. And then you also analyze the barriers in relation to the use of the corridors. This can be in relation to the different rules which apply to the condition of transport which apply to the corridors. And this study should tell us where we have to act. So the intention is to reinforce this connectivity to the benefit of rail. And of course, we expect also for these big project to materialize, to give concrete result in the coming years, so in the coming 5 to 10 years. So in this period, we expect then not only we will boost the traffic in the European Union, but also we will boost the traffic between the Union and Asia. I would say on a reciprocal basis. So I think we have to act in a way in which we'll ensure that the respective interests of the Union and China are taken into account, both in relation to the standards we intend to apply to these corridors, which will also, of course, open to the industrial interest, to the respective industrial interest, but also to the services, though, to be sure that these services are open to the European competitors.
You're referring to the structure, financial structure of all these undertakings. Now, we're coming perhaps to the very near future. We are already in 2021, and back to this idea of a European Year of Rail. Which is to be not just a service or a vision, but also an event or a number of events with cultural celebrations, stopovers in major European capitals. And we also have historical references that Konrad maybe wishes to.
Yes, I'm reading currently. Book written by a British historian, Orlando Figes. It's called The Europeans. I warmly recommend this book because he's describing like railways in the 19th century created a cultural European space. Because for the first time it was possible that opera companies were driving very quickly from Napoli to St. Petersburg, from St. Petersburg to Paris, or that you could send works of art, big works of art, which were impossible to transport with diligences, you could transport by train and so on. This was creating a real new European space. I think we should come back to this or even do better than this.
I tend to fully agree with you. So this cultural heritage is very important. So I think in our life we cannot make progress without learning from the past. So and we have to always to look at back and see what was the situation in the past year. 2020, why we decided to declare 2021 this year the European Year of Rail. Of course, there are many reasons from the policy perspective. It will be this year the first year of implementation of a new strategy, of a new smart and mobility sustainable strategy. It will be also the first year of a full application of a railway law. So there are reasons related to the policy developments at the Union level, but there are also reasons related to other events. So, for example, this year there will be the Europalia Railways Festival organized by Belgium, which is very important, where all the aspects of cultural heritage will be underlined. It will be also the 20th anniversary of the first directive. It was promulgated in 1991 on rail. It is a centenary of the International Union of Railways, and also it is the anniversary of the first ever rail link between the two capitals of Paris and Brussels, and also the anniversary of 40 years of a train at Grand Vitesse, of a high-speed train in Germany, and 25 years of a Eurostar and the Channel Tunnel. So there are many occasions to celebrate rail. Of course, when we do so, what are the main objectives? There are two objectives. One is to put rail in the spotlight, to attract the attention of citizens and businesses to rail, to convince them to shift to rail. So, and this will be essential in all the initiative we are organizing. A second objective is to also to focus on the remaining challenges for rail. So there are challenges still on the table, and we have to solve them as soon as possible. So it is also an invitation to all the rail community to pool their efforts and to contribute to the renaissance, I would say, of rail, if we look at rail it was in the past. So rail can be the main ingredients of this transformation, of this new revolution. In your title, you have put a reference to the end of an era of a low cost. For me, I would say it's a different... It has a different meaning. It is not about low cost. It's about, I would say, slow living. So a different way of living, which is more human. So it is not a fast and quick living. So, and rail has the right place in this new way of living. And I think we have to think about. So I have to admit that traveling by rail is far more comfortable than traveling by air. So maybe air is quicker, but rail is giving you plenty of opportunity to socialize, to work on board of a train, to come into the town, in the center of the towns. So it is really a different lifestyle that we have to take from now on. And I think this will improve dramatically our condition of life. So this is why we want to promote rail. And we hope that many citizens, and I see I'm very confident, because the younger generation, it has a different mind on this. And I think they will be the main actor in the coming years. So younger generation, I hope, will make of rail the main modalities for the next years.
Thank you. I think we have come to the end of our session. Thank you very much for this. We are ready. We are very much looking forward to taking the train and moving around Europe. Thank you very much, Mr. Castelletti.
Thank you to you. And of course, we are always available to help and to support in this effort to make rail a success in the next years. Thank you very much.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.